So I would now like to invite Floyd Martin up to read a very special poem which he introduced to me earlier this summer. And as soon as I saw the poem, I thought this has to become the focus of a service. And I'm so grateful to you, Floyd, for introducing it. And I'd love for you to read it for everyone now. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Nika. Santa Claus here. My seatmate asked me, where'd you get this? Well, Mary and I are very active in Kiwanis, and the third item in every agenda is a words of inspiration. And this was read a couple months ago, and I wrote a two-page reaction to it, and I shared it with Nika, and she's prepared the sermon. So here's the poem. It's called What Will Matter? It's by Michael Josephson. Ready or not, someday it will all come to an end. There will be no more sunrises, no minutes, hours, or days. Your wealth, fame, and power will shrivel to irrelevance. Your grudges, resentments, frustrations, and jealousies will finally disappear. So too, your hopes, ambitions, plans, and to-do lists will expire. The wins and losses that once seemed so important will fade away. It will not matter where you came from or what side of the tracks you lived on at the end. It will not matter where you were beautiful or brilliant. Even your gender or skin color will be irrelevant. What will matter is not what you bought, but what you built. Not what you got, but what you gave. What will matter is not your success, but your significance. What will matter is every act of integrity, compassion, courage, or sacrifice that enriched, empowered, or encouraged others. What will matter is not your competence, but your character. What will matter is for what you will be remembered. Living a life that matters doesn't happen by accident. It's not a matter of circumstance, but of choice. Choose to live a life that matters.
Thank you, Floyd, for sharing that poem with me and for inspiring me to create this service and reflect deeply on what it means to live a life that matters. So this poem is in many ways kind of a stripping down, a reminder that what we often chase isn't what's ultimately important or will last. In the end, the measures that much of society uses to judge our worth, like wealth, beauty, influence, status, they all fade into dust as we become part of the earth. Now, sure, some people are remembered for their inventions or their scientific breakthroughs or their writing or music or art or even their roles in life. But most of us, if we're not operating at that level, may wonder what our lives are truly about and what actually matters. Anyone curious about that? A few of you. Okay, good. Many people come to me and ask me to help them find their life purpose. They long to know how they should live their lives so that they matter. Perhaps there's no grand achievement or mission why we're actually alive here and now. Maybe it's just the ordinary, everyday ways our presence on this planet makes a difference that matters, in small ways or in large. So I interviewed a few of our elders in the congregation to hear what matters to them, and this is what they had to say about it. Marcy Wingard, over there, shares that what matters most in my life at this time is using the time wisely for worthwhile things. As I age and know there are more yesterdays than tomorrows, I want each day to count for something. Of course, that doesn't mean I never waste time. Everyone does. It means that any time wasting I do is deliberate, perhaps even necessary for my sanity or relaxation. It means I know what I'm doing at all times and know it is what I've chosen to do. Sometimes it's in the company of pleasant people, sometimes being of service, sometimes quiet contemplation. Time wasting is watching mindless television, listening to people gossip, or worrying about the future or pastimes that I can't do anything about. I want my time used to further something, even if that something is only my serenity. Thank you, Marcy. And then Thelma Williams over there shares, I try to take time to share family and friends' joys, to listen to classical music, to read each day, and to continue to study and learn new things, to enjoy nature and to keep moving. We need to realize how fortunate we are, to be aware that we are not alone, and not to forget those who are struggling each day. We are so spoiled. And Floyd, in addition to sharing the poem, told me incredible stories of his complex and dramatic family history. My jaw just dropped when I read them. It was quite amazing, which I encourage you to ask him about. But in terms of his own life, the following lines of the poem were particularly meaningful to him. What will matter is every act of integrity, compassion, courage, or sacrifice that enriched, empowered, and encouraged others. What will matter is not your competence, but your character. What will matter is for what you will be remembered. And at age 84, Floyd says, I remember and give thanks daily to my parents, my brother, extended family, teachers, preachers and friends who helped shape my life. And we give thanks, Floyd, for the many ways that you have shaped this community as a past president of Chalice, and all the ways you and Mary have helped Chalice flourish for over 48 years now. That's a legacy. Thank you. So I see common themes among our elders: gratitude, family, making the most of every moment, service, giving back, and growth. I know their lives matter to me because they model courage and kindness and generosity and wisdom. When I worked as a hospice chaplain and shepherded people and their families through their final days or months of their lives, what emerged again and again as most important was the love they shared. In those moments, the unfinished business, the family struggles, the hurts and upsets often rose to the surface, visible either in the care or lack of care that was offered. But in families where the dying person had loved others deeply and well, where they'd made peace with others and themselves, there was a palpable sense of a life well lived. I remember when my father was dying in 2013. This once powerful, successful man disappeared into a mere shadow of himself as he was riddled with Parkinson's and Lewy body's dementia. All his authority and accomplishments seemed a distant memory. But what remains with me? I think I get all choked up. It's the moments of laughter that we shared, and wrestling with him in bed as a kid, and the tears that we cried together at a London Symphony Orchestra concert in the second movement of Mahler's Fifth Symphony, and the operas we conducted together in our living room when I was young and my dad played them at top volume on his reel-to-reel tape player. And the moments that he was really present and I felt truly loved and seen by him. So much of what he thought would matter really didn't remain. What mattered was our connection and the love we shared. As Michael Josephson said, what will matter is not what you bought, but what you built. Not what you got, but what you gave. What will matter is not your success, but your significance. What will matter is not your memories, but the memories that live in those who loved you. Living a life that matters doesn't happen by accident. It's not a matter of circumstance, but of choice. Choose to live a life that matters, he says. So I think Josephson's poem can be summed up in the following markers for a meaningful life: what we gave rather than what we got, whom we loved, and how deeply. Whether our days left the world a bit more whole than we found it. And what we need to choose to be intentional about our impact. So what if what ultimately matters is being intentional about the kind of life we choose to live? What do we want to choose? What choices will matter? What matters to me is living with integrity, with authenticity, with passion, and kindness. To feel fully alive and expressed while I have the privilege of being on this planet. As Henry David Thoreau said, I want to live deep and suck all the marrow out of life. It matters to me that I make others' lives better. To be of service, whether through reflecting their divine spark, through deep listening, or encouragement, generosity, or advocacy. It matters to me to learn and grow every day so that I can be the best version of myself possible and thereby have better relationships. But what matters to me most is that I spread more love and joy on this planet. When I live this way, I feel deeply fulfilled and in alignment and at one with all that is, with the mystery of life and the spirit of love. I feel joyful and connected to my purpose and my higher self. And hopefully what matters to me will also make my life worthwhile. Which made me wonder, as I was incubating the sermon over the last few weeks, to whom do we want our lives to matter? It occurred to me that there are four populations that we can focus on to whom our legacy might matter. First of all, the self. Does my life matter to me? Am I whole, fully expressed, healing, authentic, and growing, kinder and more loving? Am I living my purpose? Am I doing the personal and spiritual work that allows me to evolve into the best version of myself and feel happy? And can I be a clear channel for my values of kindness, compassion, peace, and love? Now, though the work of awakening and self-realization isn't selfish, it doesn't have great significance if we don't, in some way, also impact the world around us for the better. Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree for 49 days before he became enlightened and then went out to teach and heal the world with what he'd learned. So the next area of influence is our friends and family, our loved ones. Does our being here enrich those closest to us? Have we brought more laughter, more love, more meaning, more kindness and grace into their lives? Do they feel more whole and happy because we lived? That seems worthwhile, doesn't it? And then, of course, there's how we impact the lives of those we know less well, strangers and our wider community and world. Have we reduced suffering in some way? Have we served the communal higher good, offered kindness to strangers, advocated for justice for the oppressed, given resources to those in need, and made the world a little better through our existence? Is there less suffering and more justice and compassion in the world because we lived? And then, the fourth area is how we impact future beings. Have we done something to preserve our planet for generations beyond us, far beyond us, as many Native American traditions do when they consider their ancestors seven generations hence in their actions? Did we leave stories, systems, and land better than we found them? Did we open channels for wisdom, care, and beauty to flow on through generations? Did we strive to ensure that our planet will be habitable in seven generations to come? So if we consider our impact in all four of these areas, we can live lives that matter, I believe. And imagine four interlocking circles or petals around the center flower in each of these areas: self, family and friends, community in the wider world, and future generations. And see which areas overlap. Any one of these areas will make your life matter. But your legacy multiplies when the circles overlap and you have something in each petal. And in the center of this Venn diagram is your legacy, what you will leave behind. Last week, during a pastoral care meeting, one of you beloveds shared the latest book by Zen Hospice founder Frank Ostaseski. He shares what he's gleaned from decades of hospice work, sitting with thousands of patients, and he's distilled their collective wisdom into his book, The Five Invitations, Discovering What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully. So his first invitation is, don't wait. We always think we have more time until one day we don't. So creating our legacy isn't for some later time, oh, I'll do that, I don't know, 5-10 years from now. It's now, daily. Secondly, he says, welcome everything, push away nothing. Life's beauty often hides inside its messiness. Even our struggles and grief can open us to compassion and love, so welcome them too. Thirdly, bring your whole self to the experience. We don't have to be perfect to matter. We just have to show up wholehearted and fully present. And fourthly, he says, find a place of rest in the middle of things. The world's pace will never slow down on its own. In fact, it's speeding up so rapidly with the spread of artificial intelligence. So rest and time for reflection is a moral practice. Exhausted and sick people can't sustain compassion and help heal the world. You need to take care of yourself. And fifthly, cultivate don't know mind. When we approach life with curiosity instead of certainty, we find wonder and connection. Curiosity keeps us teachable and humble. So these are not just deathbed lessons, my friends. These are life lessons, right? They're about how to be awake while we're still breathing. And they point us towards the key elements of living a life that matters. But of course, this isn't new wisdom. It's the echo of what spiritual teachers have been saying for millennia. In the world's many wisdom traditions across the world, Buddhism teaches us impermanence, that every moment is precious because it will never come again. as well as the importance of being fully present in the now. And of course, Christianity reminds us that the greatest of these qualities is love. And we know that Jesus modeled an inspiring life through his advocacy and service to the least among us and his steadfast love. Judaism calls us to tikkun olam, to repair the world. Islam urges us to act with sincerity and intention, which they call niyyah, as well as generosity, which is zakat. Hinduism calls us to live our dharma, our deepest purpose in life. Indigenous traditions remind us that we belong to an interdependent web and we must act for the sake of seven generations to come. And paganism invites us to live in harmony with beautiful nature and our precious earth. Whereas Taoism calls us to live according to the flow of life. And then humanism affirms that our greatest legacy is the care that we extend to one another now, in this moment. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't talk about our Unitarian Universalist tradition, which guides us too, echoing all these other faiths. With love at the center, our values call us to remember our interdependence and act as if our lives are interwoven with all other beings, because they are. Love at the center calls us to work for equity and justice, bending power toward fairness and advocating for the marginalized and widening our circle of inclusion. It calls us to live with generosity, giving our time, attention, resources, forgiveness, and love freely. And to value pluralism by learning from the many different paths and allowing difference to deepen compassion and understanding. And of course, our last value is transformation. And we're invited to keep working on our own transformation, to continue to grow and let life change you for good so you can help transform the world. Let me just take a sip of tea. How all these different religions express it is different, but the message is the same. Love well, give freely, live with intention, tread gently on this earth. Connection, compassion, and contribution matter more than personal gain. Personally, I distill a life that matters to three key aspects: grow your inner life, reduce suffering, and increase goodness. A life well lived is one which evolves psychologically, spiritually, and emotionally to allow you to be the best version of yourself. Do the psycho-spiritual work that clears your inner channel so that your living is less encumbered by fear, by anger, by control, reactivity, or approval seeking. I try to work on this every day. Growing your inner life isn't self-centered. It's how you stop passing on your pain to others and how you're able to love others more. Secondly, reduce suffering. Choose to serve the alleviation of suffering in some way, whether by lessening someone's pain, listening to their struggle, or helping heal emotional, material, or spiritual disconnection. Disconnection is what brings about wars, anger, loneliness, and fear. So I invite us to try to serve connection and love in any way that we can. And finally, increase goodness. Be a pollinator of delight, of kindness, of beauty, of laughter, of wisdom, generosity, awe, and presence. A life well lived is one in which you've helped increase the amount of love, joy, and peace in the world, and lifted up the magic of this existence that we have for a brief time. I meditate and move daily to help increase my efficacy in these areas. So these three principles align with the UU process, which we teach in our newcomer's starting point class, which many of you have taken. Do you remember? Listen deeply within, open to life's gifts, and serve needs greater than our own. Listen deeply within, open to life's gifts, and serve needs greater than our own. Or another way of summing up our Unitarian Universalist approach is to say, we choose love over fear. We choose connection and community over isolation and division. We choose compassion over indifference and hate. And we choose justice and equity over apathy. And these choices, made over and over again, shape the story we leave behind and create lives that matter and help us find purpose and meaning. So, my beloveds, here's the invitation. Imagine you knew that you had 1 year or less left to live. What would you do differently? Whom would you call? What words would you finally say? What would you stop wasting your time on? Whom could you help? What would you cultivate within and for others? And here's the hard part. What would it take to start doing those things now, today? Because the truth is, we never know when our last day may come, and we don't have to wait until our last days to live our best days or begin to live a life that matters. So I invite those of you who are interested in talking about this a little further to hang out at the end of the service with me to discuss these matters more deeply. Just stay here in the sanctuary before you go to coffee, and we can have a little chat if you like. But here are five possible ways that you could begin incorporating some of these ideas this week, even today. Firstly, draw your legacy circles. Write at least one sentence per circle for self, for loved ones, for community in the wider world, and for the future. Choose one action to focus on. Secondly, reduce suffering. Find an opportunity to listen, to give a gift, or to offer respite, or do advocacy. Thirdly, do some inner cleanup. Choose one way you want to be more loving and less fearful or reactive. Fourth, love and repair. Call someone to appreciate them or make amends. And fifthly, do a joy audit. Note one joy that you caused or one that you felt each day. My beloveds, may we walk from here lighter, less burdened by the temporary, and inspired to live consciously. May we be quick to forgive, generous to give, and unafraid to love. May our healing, love, presence, and creative spirit be the legacy remembered. And may every day count. And may our lives, however long they are, ripple outward with kindness, courage, and joy, so that when our time comes, it may be said, they lived a life that mattered. May it be so. So let us close with a song called "Let the Life I Lead Speak for Me."